The NBA has long been dominated by men, from players to coaches to the executives in corporate offices. But the league is trying to change that, and there are now some female refs, female coaches, and women in the NBA's front offices. One such woman is right here in Georgia with the Atlanta Hawks. And Nzinga Shah became the NBA's first ever Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer in 2014. Her job is to promote and foster diversity within the organization and in the surrounding community. And now that she has a couple years under her belt, we decided to check in with her and see how it's going. Good morning, Nzinga.
Good morning, Celeste. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
How specifically do you, if you're not in charge of hiring players or hiring workers, how do you promote diversity?
So diversity to me is very complex, and it's not only about hiring. I certainly am a part of the hiring process and think about ways that we can attract new talent. And then when we get the talent, think about ways to curate and cultivate an experience for them to reach their maximum potential. But when we think about the game of basketball or even the sport, we have to think beyond what happens on the court. A lot of the decisions that are made about what you see during the fan experience in a game happen in boardrooms and happen in corporate America. And so fostering a diverse and inclusive environment is critically important, and it's what I do. So I have a lot of community relationships, a lot of community partnerships, and think about ways to engage new and emerging communities that we have not previously touched so that we can infuse new thought patterns and new ideas into the way that we make decisions.
What's the benefit then for the NBA or for the Atlanta Hawks? I mean, is it really just about the bottom line and trying to make sure that you have future fans?
I think that's part of it. I don't think that's all of it. I think what we're really trying to do is build community and make sure that we stay true to our city's tagline, which is, we're the city too busy to hate. As you know, we went through a very public and humiliating crisis back in 2014, in which our senior leadership was outed for saying some very hurtful language towards our
African. Talking about trying to get more white people to come to the games.
Correct. And that hurt a lot of people. It didn't only hurt the African-American people that were being talked about, but it hurt a lot of other constituents and stakeholders in the city. And so part of what diversity and inclusion and what my role is to do is rebuild trust with the people that have been wronged, and also just to foster an inclusive environment so that anybody can feel comfortable participating in our game experience, no matter where they hail from, no matter who they love, no matter what their socioeconomic background is, and all of the myriad of things that make diversity real.
Well, I'm not telling you anything you don't know to say that what happened with the Atlanta Hawks is not the only time we have seen headlines made because of often ownership or management have made racially insensitive remarks about players, especially. But this one is about a referee. Last season, Los Angeles Clippers star Chris Paul publicly denounced a female official after a game. Referee Lauren Holdkamp called a technical foul on Paul, and this is what he said.
So I don't care what nobody say. I don't care what she say. That's terrible. Yeah. There's no way that can be a tech. We try to get the ball out fast every time down the court.
Yeah.
And when we did that, she said, uh-uh. And I said, why uh-uh? And she gave me a tech.
Okay.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then this might not be for her.
So this might not be for her were kind of the words that got him in big trouble. But many people in the basketball community were very quick to come out and say what he said was not okay. Here is TNT analyst and former player Kenny Smith.
There's no way you can make that comment. And there's so many ramifications behind it because, you know, not only that's a rookie ref, you know, it's a female rookie ref. You know, it's kind of taking shots because none of the players have ever taken shots like that, you know, at any of the other rookie refs in that regard. So, yeah, he lost it.
So I assume that gender diversity is also something that you're concerned with. And I wonder what you take away from this as a lesson.
So, yes, gender diversity is very important. All diversity is important. I don't put one demographic over another. But in this context and in the context of this conversation, I certainly take away that the players need to be educated. There is a lot of stigma around what it means to have women officials and women in charge. And I think that because it is such a new concept, a lot of people are uncomfortable. It's no different than people being uncomfortable with the LGBT community or people being uncomfortable with minorities in power. It's something that we're not used to. And so a lot of my job and a lot of what we need to do at the league level is to educate players so that they understand why diversity is critically important to this success of our league beyond the traditional notions that they're used to.
I mean, gender is obviously a huge topic of conversation in all of sports. Of course, we have the female soccer players who have filed a complaint because they're paid so much less than their males, despite the fact that they bring in more money. And I wanted to play you this this comment from Becky Hammon. She was the first female full-time assistant coach coaching for the Spurs in 2014. Last year, she actually helped lead the Spurs summer league team to a championship. So let's take a listen to an interview that she did with CBS.
It takes some courageous men to hand women opportunities. You know, everybody's talking about me being the first male. Well, Greg Popovich handed me this hammer to kind of smash this glass ceiling. I don't want to downplay the significance of it because it is a big deal. I get that. But I also want it to be known that I was hired because I was qualified.
How does that discussion go? I mean, she's a major professional in a major sport, and yet here she is saying, trying to defend her own qualifications, which I can't imagine many men have to do. So for you, how does that discussion, when you're talking about educating players, what does that sound like?
It sounds to me like she is making an excuse or at least being apologetic for her role. And I think that we have to move beyond those type of thought patterns, and we have to actually embrace the roles that we're doing. Because at the end of her comment, she said something that it resonated with me, and it's, you have to be qualified for your job. And I think that's what we have gotten away from, focusing on people being qualified for the tasks that they're being asked to do, and really just tried to cover up everything that we do under the terms of their race or their gender. And that's very unfortunate. It's unfortunate for a variety of reasons. A person's gender does not define everything that they bring to the table. Neither does a person's race. But they are very critically important to make sure that we have a variety of these things and settings in corporate America. So if you're in a homogenous environment where everything is the same, you're not going to thrive. It's important to have women. It's important to have people of color. It's important to have LGBT. But it cannot be the defining moment of what that individual brings to the table. First and foremost, they've got to have the skill set to do the job. And I think that brings credibility to their position in the role.
Well, then let's go back to what you were talking about earlier, and that was the controversy in 2014 when management was talking about audiences. Because there's a nugget of truth in the fact that what is going to please a larger African-American as opposed to a Latino versus a large white audience, he even brought it down to the music. And that he's right. Like, they're not all going to be happy with the same kind of music that you play, although I'm not sure you can separate it according to what the color of their skin is. But how do you then make an inclusive experience when people do have very particular tastes?
Well, you have to make sure your fan experience team is well-versed in what all of the demographics in your particular city are looking for. So on any given night at an Atlanta Hawks game, we're going to have different experiences. One night we happened to feature an LGBT couple on our Kiss Cam, a lesbian couple that got engaged. That was very new for the NBA. It's something that had not been seen previously. But because Atlanta happens to have a large population of LGBT, we have to make sure that we're allowing their stories to be told and allowing them to have a comfortable and fun experience. We have, they're oftentimes...
Was there discussion about that? Was there argument over that before it happened?
So there was definitely a discussion. There was not an argument. The discussion in our boardroom is, we have a request from an LGBT couple that they'd like to propose on Kiss Cam. And it was a very simple discussion. As long as they went about the procedure and protocol to apply just like any heterosexual couple, we will not deny them the right to do it. And because their story was more compelling than any other heterosexual couple that we received that week, they won the opportunity to be featured, and they were. So I think conversations are starting to shift, and we're really starting to think about the holistic vision and view for what diversity and inclusion looks like, and not whether or not people will be offended. Of course, some people will be offended and some people will embrace it, but it's really about doing what's right.
How much progress have we made? I mean, you've been on the job now for 2 years.
A year and 4 months. It feels like 2 years. A lot of people think I've been in the role a lot longer than
I have. You started in late 2014?
I started December 8th, 2014.
Oh, okay. So pretty much you know 2014.
No. I hit the ground running in January of 2015.
Okay, so really you've been on the job less than a year and a half.
Correct.
So this is probably an unfair question, but I'm going to give you 1 minute to answer it.
Sure.
How, what kind of progress has been made?
I think I've made tremendous progress. Our whole entire team has in a very short period of time. Within the first 90 days of my role, I established a diversity and inclusion council, and the council really informs our overall strategy and programs that we've been putting out throughout the year. Our council is made up of 20 individuals. 10 are employees of the Atlanta Hawks and Phillips Arena organization, and the other 10 are stakeholders that are critically important to our organization. They're either season ticket holders, ex-professional athletes, people from the city council, people that have low socioeconomic background and are unemployed, LGBT, Muslim, Jewish, Christian, the list goes on. So I've really tried to look at a cross-section of people and stakeholders in this city and get the best thought leaders and brains together to inform our strategy. From that, we have created a lot of interesting programs. We have the first business resource group ever in the NBA, and it's called Hawks WIN, W-I-N, which stands for Women's Inclusion Network. And it's a group of internal employees at the Atlanta Hawks and Phillips Arena that are, and it's not only women, there are also men in our organization that are a part of WIN, but WIN really wants to cultivate an experience so that women can have resources and mentorship and conversations and, yeah, and solve business problems together. This has never been done in the NBA. We've also had a program with My Brother's Keeper of Fulton County to make sure that African-American and Hispanic children are being exposed, yeah, to our game. And the list goes on. I mean, we can talk for a long time about it, but I'm very pleased with the progress.
Nzinga Shaw, Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer for the Atlanta Hawks, thank you so much.
Thank you.